candidates from a working class party or from a popular party, a third party. We shouldn't have anything to do with the established parties because they're obviously capitalist parties.
Parties and their candidates. Okay. That's right.
So what we should have is a party of the workers' movement. A candidate from the workers' movement.
That's right.
Okay. And it seems to me, once again, that's not something I disagree with. I'll be happy to see it when it comes. I'll be happy to vote for it. I'm looking forward to it. But in fact, we don't have it. We don't have it right now. And so the question is, what do we do until that candidate arrives?
Okay, John, your turn.
The whole point is that we will never have it if every time an election comes up, we capitulate to the objective facts. We worship objective facts as you worship at the altar and say, okay, well, we don't have it now, and so therefore we will choose the lesser evil, support for any of these candidates, including Ron Paul, although when you really look at what he stands for, I don't see how anybody could claim that he's even the lesser evil. But anyway, what that means is you're just worshiping objective facts rather than using the election campaign to fight for workers' candidates. And if you do that, we'll never, ever have the workers' voice in politics, which just the history of the last 50, 75 years proves that.
What should people have done in, say, 1932? Should they have waited for a workers' candidate, or should they have voted for one of the capitalist parties?
Well, it's very interesting because in those years, both the Socialist Party and the Communist Party ran candidates, and together they received almost 1 million votes. And it was exactly that created that forced the Democrats to bring through the reforms that were brought about.
But see, what we're talking about here, I think, is what do we do? What do we do in the existing situation? And I'm suggesting that working for your workers' candidate and voting for candidates who are part of the present National Party is not an either-or. I'm perfectly happy to try to build that workers' party. I'm perfectly happy to wait for work for a candidate of the workers' party. In the meantime,
it's an either or.
We should understand what it is. An either or, you say?
Absolutely.
It's an alternative.
Because
you can't
if you're
do that.
Going to vote for a capitalist candidate, then if you're going to be consistent, which I assume you are, then you have to campaign for that candidate. You have to urge others to vote for that candidate.
Okay. But there isn't any such candidate, John.
I'm sorry?
There isn't any such candidate.
No, a capitalist candidate. If you're going to vote for a capitalist candidate, did I say a workers' candidate?
That's the way I understood you.
Okay, I meant a capitalist candidate. If you're going to vote for one of them, then you have to urge others to vote for them. So, and then you lose the ability to raise this issue and to start to organize around the need for workers' representatives at exactly the time when it has to be raised even more strongly.
Yeah, see,
as I say, the whole history of the last 75 years proves that. At every single key turning point in American history, during the anti-Vietnam War movement, during the Civil Rights movement, during the mass upsurges of the working class, such as in the 30s, at every single key turning point, the history proves that that is the case.
Well, I still say there's a problem in that I can look for this sort of candidate and wait for this sort of candidate, but when I walk into the voting booth, I don't turn around and walk out because the candidate is not on the ballot.
No.
I have to choose one of those candidates who is on the ballot.
Oh, if you have a pen, you can also write in your own candidate, or you can cast a blank ballot. But what we happen to write on a scrap of paper and put in a box is secondary. What is more important is what you write on that scrap of paper is, if you're going to be consistent, what you have to advocate.
Well,
and you cannot, from what I understand, you're advocating voting for Ron Paul.
I am. I'm voting for...
Which you can't even argue he is the lesser evil. But even if you could, And we can get to that, and I hope we do.
Yes, that'll be another. What I'm doing is, John, is I want to start this off with the whole strategy, electoral politics, and I want to take just a short music break, then come back and talk specifically about Ron Paul. So, if you guys could kind of just make kind of concluding statements on this topic.
If I could just say one.
Go ahead. Sure.
I'm not advocating waiting for it. Just the opposite. It's Carl who's advocating waiting for it. I'm advocating organizing for it now.
And okay. I'm perfectly happy to organize for it now and still
recognize...
You can't
if you're going to advocate voting for Ron Paul or any other capitalist candidate.
You know, the old line is a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds, John, and I don't intend to be foolishly consistent on this matter. It is foolish to say that, well, I think it's worthwhile voting for Ron Paul in the, say, the Illinois primary in March, but I can't do that because I'm really working for a workers' party. That, to me, is inconsistent.
Okay, we're going to take a short music break. John, please stay on the line, and we're going to be right back here in just about a minute and a half. Stay tuned. Now, you're listening to the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Sports Radio in East Central Illinois. Stay tuned.
Presidents or popes, or kings or queens or generals, or CIA kingpins running dope. History's not made by nine robed men, or billionaires or bankers. It's not made by them. Black Spartacus heart attack machine. Black Spartacus heart attack machine. Black Spartacus heart attack machine. Might throw a little money around, wondering who can be bought. Some might find they're weaker, some stronger than they thought. Well, I stand or fall right here in my country, in my home. I used to think I was alone. Well,
okay, that was some brand new music from Tom Morello, and we're back now with John Ryman calling in from Oakland, California, and Carl Esterbrook, and we're talking about electoral politics, the Ron Paul campaign, and the workers' movement. And so we had a good little discussion there. I thought it was excellent, actually, about the whole tactic, ends and means, if you will, of electoral politics. So now the last part of that discussion kind of seems like it's already made a transition into where I want to go next is, in particular, Ron Paul. So I want to have, this time I want to have Carl start out. And Carl, you know, knowing your views and everything, and I think you've expressed them and you know pretty well here on the opening and everything. Why is it that you advocate or that you yourself anyway are going to be voting for Ron Paul in the Illinois primary?
He's a spanner in the works. He's that wooden shoe thrown into the machine. You know, we have an electoral machine here that is supposed to convince everybody that we have a democracy, right? And the machine is not perfect. It doesn't work exactly right. You know, we've seen how it's been worked in the Obama campaign, where people who wanted one thing got another, and Obama's job was essentially to sell it to them. The Ron Paul campaign has broken out of this form. He hasn't come up rightly, and therefore the approach to him has always been, that he's a crazy outsider. He doesn't belong in the election, and that's precisely his charm. The two most important things the federal government does is kill people and transfer wealth from the majority to the minority. So we've had an immense concentration of wealth, an accelerating concentration of wealth in the society over the last 30 to 40 years. And the federal government there is, in the famous words of Mayor Daley, the government's not there to cause disorder. The government's there to protect disorder. And it's protecting that disorder that's exactly what it's about. Now, Paul comes along and says, the killing should stop. We should bring these troops home from around the world. And the mechanisms that have been used to transfer wealth from the poor to the rich, that is Wall Street, the Fed, the banks, they should be attacked.
And the other
That's
thing,
pretty good.
Yeah, and the other thing is that you've told me in the past that the other reason that you have expressed support for Ron Paul is his positions on civil liberties issues. He opposed the Patriot Act and most recently the military detention bill. Is that correct?
You're absolutely right. These are things that you've pointed out in recent correspondence, and it seems to me you're quite right about that. Seems to me there's another aspect of this too. The most oppressive, most racially oppressive set of laws in the country right now are undoubtedly the war on drugs. And Ron Paul is the one candidate in the race right now, who's attacked that directly. Mm-hmm. Now, we wonder about his motives. These crazy sort of libertarian ideas that people should be free to do what they want when they run large corporations and whatnot. We've got we all are able to critique that pretty easily. But the fact of the matter is, whatever the starting point, Ron Paul ends up with these positions: anti-interventionist, anti-drug war, pro-civil liberties, in terms of attacking the Patriot Act, the NDAA, and things of this sort, that no other major party candidate is saying. So, hey, let's play this particular confusion within the ranks of the political system.
Okay, I just wanted to make a comment. This bill, Gorrell. What this statement just kind of reminded me of was the old saying that, yes, in the United States we have socialism for the wealthy. Well, we also have libertarianism for the wealthy, and we have neither socialism nor libertarianism for the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John?
Well, I thought it was interesting what he said about that Ron Paul is a wooden shoe thrown into the machine.
Yep.
And those of us who have been around since the Vietnam War, we'll probably remember William Calley, who was that lieutenant who led his troops into a village in Vietnam and slaughtered every single man, woman, and child in the village. And in so doing, he gave the United States and the whole Vietnam War a tremendous black eye. And Ron Paul is a wooden shoe thrown into the machine in the same way that William Calley was, that Lieutenant Calley was a wooden shoe thrown into the Vietnam War machine. Let's take a look at what Ron Paul really stands for. And I think it's very interesting, and it really is proof of my point. I'm sure that Carl is very aware of what he stands for, but he completely neglected the real facts. On foreign policy, on Ron Paul's own website, he quotes Ronald Reagan as having said, "Ron Paul is one of the outstanding leaders fighting for a stronger national defense." On Ron Paul's whole alleged support of individual freedom and democracy, on the fortunate death of economist Milton Friedman, Ron Paul published a glowing tribute to him, completely ignoring the fact that one of the big boosts to Friedman's career was his support for that vicious military coup in Chile, the Pinochet coup, which killed some 20,000 or 30,000 people and completely crushed all individual freedom. Ron Paul didn't see any problem with supporting that. On his economic policy, another thing, his whole campaign against the Federal Reserve, what that really amounts to in practice is giving the private banks complete and unlimited control over fiscal policy in the United States. And if you link that with his economic policy of cutting $1 trillion from the federal budget, which means 15, as he himself advocates, Paul advocates, cutting about 15% from the military budget, but something like a third, 33%, from all the social programs. And his economic policies, the consequence, and there's really not time right now to get into a full explanation, but the consequence would be massive deflation, which would mean that it would be much, much harder for the debtors, which is homeowners, working-class people, to repay their debts, and it would be enormously boost the profits of the banks, the creditors. Let's look at some of his other policies. He opposes the right of public sector workers to unionize. He calls the union wage, quote, an artificial construct. He supports a national right to work law and opposes also a national minimum wage. He opposes government right, quote, government power, quote, to infringe on the rights of private property owners to use their property as they please. And what this means on the one hand is the right of corporations to completely plunder and rape and destroy the environment, and on the other hand, the right of property owners to return to the good old days of Jim Crow laws. In other words, their right to discriminate in you know, as far as who they serve and so on. He opposes the separation of church and state. He calls abortion infanticide, that is to say, killing of children. He opposes, he has not been beneath using the most blatant racist tactics to campaign for election. And then, of course, now he's lying when he says he didn't know about that. He calls global warming a hoax and fear-mongering. He supports the idea that those who can't afford health care, that we should let them die. He's linked with and has supported Spotlight magazine, which is a Holocaust-denying Nazi magazine, or was, until it folded in 2001. He supports that he calls for the abolition of Social Security. He, of his policies, the main thing is he completely supports massive acceleration of the competition amongst workers for who should work for less. And totally supports laissez-faire capitalism and the idea that the interests of corporate America, of the capitalist class, and the interests of the working class are one and the same. And how anybody can claim to be on the side of the working class and at the same time advocate voting for Ron Paul, quite frankly, is just beyond me.
Okay, before Carl answers, I just want to ask one quick question here. John, aren't these the policies of all the Republicans and the Democratic Party?
Well, to one extent or another, but that's like saying that the policy that Ron Paul carries it to the greatest extreme.
Okay, Carl.
So John,
there's no difference between the Ku Klux Klan and some just, you know, ordinary run of the mill racist.
So, John, if the Republicans, per impossibile, actually nominate Ron Paul for president, and we have an election this fall between Ron Paul and Barack Obama, which would you vote for?
I would vote for neither.
Uh-huh. Well, that's the reason I started the discussion. We have to say what we want to do with electoral politics at all. It seems to me that it would be far better in those circumstances to vote for Ron Paul, precisely his rejection of Obama's policies in the areas that I mentioned a moment ago that are the most important ones the federal government is engaged in right now, that is massive killing in Asia and Africa and massive transfers of wealth in this country. Ron Paul's against both of those.
Would transfer the wealth even more rapidly greater extent than any of the other candidates. That's what his policies amount to.
The killing's more important, I think. But I'm not at all sure that the second point is right.
Well, it's absolutely right when you look at his economic policies. There's absolutely no doubt whatsoever that that's what they would amount to. I think it's very interesting, and it's of necessity, that in advocating voting for Ron Paul, that that one has to absolutely either totally ignore and in so doing cover up for, or some of his policies, or on the other hand, minimize and in fact, I know you're not doing this intentionally, but misrepresent the effects of his others, such as his economic policies.
We got a real good specific issue here right now. So that basically would be Ron Paul's economic policies. And what you've just laid out, I think, and Carl disagrees. So let's go to the heart of this matter. So, Carl, you want to respond first, and then John?
I'd be glad to. What I'd like to do is actually shift back to those two points that the federal government is most involved with. The first one is killing people in Asia and Africa. The second one is transferring wealth in this country. I agree they both should be talked about. But it seems to me that by being unwilling to oppose the policies of the current government, you are tacitly supporting the continuation of the killing, which Obama has brought us. Now, you know, I know you don't mean to do that. I know that's not your view. But it seems to me that if we want to try to stop these criminal wars that the Obama administration is carrying on, we've got to vote against them. And, you know, in the scenario that we suggested, voting against them would be voting for Ron Paul.
Let me ask you real quick, Carl, before John responds. Do you see voting for Ron Paul as a tactic to kind of get these issues out there more as actually supporting his whole platform?
Exactly. Okay. And it's and John's point earlier about the real need of an election or the real value of an election is that you get to talk to people, that it's a matter of education. Ron Paul has crept in from under a rock, according to some people, into the system. And as a result, people can actually say things about anti-interventionism with reference to a major candidate. Can say things about attacking the Federal Reserve with reference to a major candidate. That's his real contribution, to put those things back into the discussion. Remember, the purpose of the election is to make sure there isn't any discussion other than whether the characters of the various candidates are acceptable or not.
Okay, John?
Well, in the first place, let's get back to the economic policies.
Yes.
And number one, Ron Paul is a union buster. He supports the national right to work law, which we all know what that means. It's really national right to work for less law. He calls the union wage, quote, an artificial construct. He opposes the right of public sector workers to have a union. Also, so there's absolutely no doubt that as far as unionism goes, that what he wants to do is accelerate the transfer of wealth from working class people to the employers. On the other point is what I've said about his economic policies, and the supporters of Ron Paul, including Carl, are absolutely mistaken, and about what this whole thing of abolishing the Federal Reserve Bank means. Because
okay, that one. Can we focus on that? Because that's, I think, where the real crux here. Okay, finish your sentence, John. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if what it really means, until the Federal Reserve was established, you had a Federal Reserve in the personhood, which is now a person of J.P. Morgan Bank. In other words, it was J.P. Morgan and a series of other large but smaller banks around them that controlled fiscal policy in the United States. It was completely privatized. And the thing is, it was so absolutely chaotic that the capitalist class themselves had to find some way to regulate things. But they did it, of course, in the interest of the capitalist class. And so what Ron Paul proposes and what the supporters of Ron Paul suggest is to revert to the previous situation where the private banks controlled fiscal policy. And if you connect that with what I said about his fiscal policies amounting to massive deflation, which would be devastating to the creditors, that is to say to people who were trying to buy their homes, trying to buy a car, and so on, you know, his policies amount to an even greater transfer of wealth to the rich.
Okay, before Carl responds, I'm a little confused, John. How does that affect fiscal policy? Fiscal policy is what the direct government spending, where
right.
The Fed is more monetary policy.
His call for an immediate cut of $1 trillion from the federal budget.
Okay, but how does that tie in with the Federal Reserve? Because isn't the Federal Reserve also a private bank?
Semi-private.
Semi-private, okay.
But what he wants to do is make it totally private, in effect,
okay,
by handing over control to the private banks.
Okay, thanks for that clarification, Carl.
John, you're defending the Federal Reserve against Ron Paul's attacks?
No, I'm not defending it at all.
Sounded like you were.
You said
if we didn't have the Federal Reserve, it would go back to the control
the
by J.P. Morgan and
Ron
friends.
Ron Paul and the libertarians propose is even worse than what we have now.
Now, most banks have a central bank.
Status quo.
Yeah, most banks have a
central bank. According to the status quo, I'm opposing what I mean, it's like if somebody in back in the 1950s, supported and opposed the civil rights movement and said, instead, we need to return to the days of slavery.
Okay, most governments have central banks, actually government-controlled central banks. If we had one here in the United States, it'd be controlled by Congress, I presume. Okay, and I'm sure that's more what you would like to see, probably, than, let's say, either the semi-private, semi-quasi-public Federal Reserve, and then the third alternative on the other end of the extreme, where basically there's just total private, just a conglomeration of private banks. Is that correct?
That's what Ron Paul is calling for.
Okay.
But John, I think David just charged you with calling for a central capitalist institution.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't charge anyone. I was just basically saying I wanted to try to clarify the options here of what exists in the world. So I didn't mean to charge anybody with anything.
I think that's exactly what we should do, is clarify these options. Remember, Ron Paul's account of the Federal Reserve, back when he was a voice crying in the wilderness, what he was crying for was an audit of the Federal Reserve. And the reason he was calling for an audit of the Federal Reserve is just what you suggest, John. That is, the Federal Reserve itself was a creature of the private banks put together in 1913 under the aegis of a Democratic administration, so that the coordination of the American banking system would be carried out by a private institution, which is what the Federal Reserve is, and in the interests of those private banks. It is our central bank. That's just the way we've chosen to do it. That's just the way the American capitalist class has chosen to do it. Now, what Paul was saying is that, hey, we need an accounting of what they're doing. We want an account of what's going on. And in fact, we found out recently that not having such an account is quite remarkable. We had an awful lot of talk about TARP and about whether the federal government should bail out some of these failing banks. And then we find out a year later and more that the $700 billion that the $700 billion that the federal government was putting up to bail out the banks was dwarfed by a sum many times that the Federal Reserve had quietly arranged for those same banks. An audit of this would be very worthwhile. An audit of this would aid democracy.
Carl, what's an answer to John's point about Ron Paul's economic policies, which there's no doubt that he's not pro-union and that he believes in whatever government regulations there are on businesses should be eliminated. Now, you contend, we didn't really get into it, but you contend that Ron Paul's policies are not about transferring wealth from the basically the working class to the ruling class, the business elite.
There's a funny thing happening here. I think that's right. I think that what's happened is that
The
theory has gotten in the way of the process. That is, the mechanisms whereby the federal government and recent administrations have facilitated the transfer of wealth from the majority to the few. The policy is basically known as neoliberalism, backed by Republicans and Democrats alike for 40 years, are peculiarly criticized by Ron Paul for reasons that I think, in fact, are not quite understood. Not quite understood by the Ron Paulists. Their notion, the libertarian notion, is that people should be free to do what they want with what they have, and that includes the rich as well as the poor. The neoliberal position is that the government should get out of the way of the maximization of profits on the part of those who control large amounts of money right now. Now, when Paul calls for the auditing of the Fed and so forth, he's actually calling for an attack on what the people who control wealth and power in this country understand as one of the central institutions that supports their wealth and power.
I'd like to make a couple of points here.
Okay.
In the first place, we have to be concrete. And I gave some very concrete examples of Ron Paul's policies. And there's absolutely no doubt, there can be no doubt, of what the economic consequences of those policies would be. On the another point, incidentally, that I think I forgot to mention, which is maybe, I think you could make an argument that it is the most important issue facing human society, in fact, facing life on Earth, is the question of the destruction of the environment, including global warming. Ron Paul considers the global warming to be a hoax, and his policies, that's his term, and his policies amount to, because of, he calls for the complete freedom of corporations to do anything that they like with their wealth. His policies amount to massive acceleration of global warming and also destruction of the environment in general. I want to make one other point about the Federal Reserve and Ron Paul's criticisms of it. And Ron Paul himself is not a Nazi or a fascist, although he does have links or has had links with Nazis, such as the Spotlight magazine. But let's remember that even the fascists, including the Nazis, had all kinds of demagogic attacks on capitalism. And so by the arguments and the mainstream capitalists in the main, right up until almost the very end, opposed the Nazis. So all the arguments, and I know Carl would not support fascism or anything like that, but all the arguments that he's putting forward could be arguments used to support fascism, too.
You see, I just can't say to Barack Obama, you're killing people at a substantial rate in Asia and Africa, but I'm going to vote for you anyhow.
No,
because your opponent, because your opponent is
someone who... Sweet red herring, Carl.
Because
nobody's
you're...
advocating voting for Obama.
Okay.
At least nobody on this show that
Mark,
I...
Yeah. Okay. We started this, John, with a notion that we're looking at a choice between Ron Paul and Barack Obama. That was the premise.
That's not the premise, actually.
That was the premise of this last section here. When I said, suppose that happened, would you vote
premise.
For them? No. And I asked you the question, and your answer was you wouldn't vote for either one.
Okay, Bill.
Yeah, I got
it. We're going to go to music break real quick.
Okay, I have something here. This is from listener Eric via Facebook. Carl knows him. And, excuse me very much, it kind of relates to this. He'd like to know if you can vote in the GOP primaries, which in Illinois is an open primary state. You can. But if you can vote for Ron Paul to make a statement against war and defense spending and for auditing the Fed, but how you communicate that without implying support just through that vote for what Eric is supporting his Aryan Nation BS.
But you have the same problem when you vote for Obama or any other candidate. That's exactly the point
that you cannot do that. And every vote added to Ron Paul swells the strength and the political clout and adds momentum to what Ron Paul represents, which is the complete unfettered domination over society by private capital.
Okay, that's good, John.
That's not true. Now,
hold on. Just a second. Hold on. That's a good stopping point. I'm going to use it as a transition. But, Carl, I want you to have one a finishing statement on that so we can continue on over into the next segment after the music break. You were going to say it.
All I was going to say was that the business of voting for people rather than principles or rather than policies is exactly how the system is set up. You have to choose one of these people. And what we're talking about is a incumbent president who's a mass murderer. And what we have is candidates of varying stripes who represent positions opposed to that. I'll vote for candidates who represent positions opposed to that.
Okay, we're going to take a quick music break. We're going to be right back with you. This is the Illinois World Laborer on WFT Radio 90.1 FM and webcast worldwide at weft.org. We'll continue this discussion debate just a minute and a half. Stay tuned.
Laying round, we pulled a shotgun out the shed and society told the heavens. Stray bullets raining on town. The captain laughed and said good luck as we rolled on through our first Iraqi town. From the rooftop we got blasted, Danny Lloyd's spine came unfastened, stray bullets raining on town.
Okay, welcome back to the Illinois World Labor Hour on WFT Radio, 90.1 FM, and www.wft.org. Okay, we're back with Carl Esterbrook and John Ryman, and I want to this next segment here, I'd like to go into, let me ask specific. I mean, we talked a lot about the, you know, the economic policies of Ron Paul and everything. I want to go specifically to the issue, briefly, of foreign policy and the wars. I'm going to start with John. John, how important do you think opposition to the war should be for working class candidates and activists out there? I mean, do you think it's a? I mean, I know there's a lot of other issues, and particularly the horrible economic issues that we're, most working people are facing. But how important do you? How much weight do you give to the war as the issues, well, and foreign policy in general?
I want to segue into answering your question.
Okay.
I want to comment on what Carl said
okay.
just before the music break when he talked about Obama as a mass murderer.
Yeah, I thought that tied in pretty well, so yes, go ahead.
The only difference between Obama and the other candidates as far as that is Obama is a mass murderer, and every single one of the other major candidates, including Ron Paul, are would-be mass murderers.
That's not right.
Because if you look at the consequences of Ron Paul's policies, including his foreign policy, it's, as he said about somebody that can't afford health insurance here, let them die.
Did Ron Paul say that? I thought that was one of the other candidates that said
no,
that.
No, that was Ron Paul. That was Ron Paul.
Okay.
And if and then, again, if you look at the consequences of his policies as far as the environment and global warming, you would have far more people die as a consequence of that than in all the wars that the United States is engaged in today.
Okay.
So Ron Paul is simply a would-be mass murderer.
No, but you don't think
that's nonsense.
Okay,
and it should be clear. It should be clear that it's nonsense.
Maybe you agree with Ron Paul that global warming is a hoax.
No.
If it's not a hoax, if it's a serious issue, then you will have hundreds of millions of people dying from it if with Ron Paul's policies. Of course, they may well anyway under capitalism. But the main point I want to make as far as foreign policy and the wars is that if you want to approach ordinary working class people on this issue, you cannot separate that from the, and you want to get a response from them. You cannot separate that from the question of the class struggle here at home.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you going to convince them to vote for Ron Paul unless you, in effect, basically lie to them? How are you going to convince them to vote for Ron Paul on the anti-war issue if you're going to link it up with the issue of the class struggle here at home, where Ron Paul is absolutely four square on the side of corporate America?
John, let me ask a quick question before Carl responds. Go ahead, Carl.
I can't say to Barack Obama, look, I'll let you continue to kill people in Asia and Africa because the only opponent you have who says he wants to stop that killing and withdraw those troops doesn't believe in global warming. That's something I can't do.
Well, look, let's be realistic. I mean, if you want to just, if your only focus is stop these wars right now, then, you know, you might as well just give up and go home, because Ron Paul is not going to stop the wars because he's not going to get elected.
Well, you support a candidate who holds that view, of
it's
course.
It's simple. So the question is, how do you start to build an independent movement of the working class here at home that that is completely independent from all the organizations, including the political parties of corporate America.
John, go build your movement. Work on it. I'll support it. I'm all in favor of it. In the meantime, not right now. Do it today. But you'll still have time to go into the voting booth and vote for someone whose policies oppose the murderous policies of the government, military and economic.
You can't, because you're going to be out there campaigning for Ron Paul.
I can't take off a half hour and go vote for these things.
I don't think Carl's going to campaign.
History proves, and anybody that's been to any extent involved in a union, their experience will prove, including my own, for 30 years in the Carpenters Union, that it is impossible to advocate voting for the corporate candidates while at the same time trying to build an independent movement of the working class. It cannot be done.
You've asserted that as an article of faith from the beginning, and I don't believe it. I'm perfectly willing to say we should be building a workers' movement, and I'm perfectly willing to say we should support establishment candidates who are opposed to the military and economic policies of the current administration.
Now, this goes back to what we first started off the hour with, is your statement, Carl, that you look at supporting Ron Paul as throwing a wooden shoe into the machine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sabot.
A sabot, yes.
Sabot. But,
and John, though, you're saying that basically that there shouldn't be any energies at all supporting any of these candidates, either whether it's Obama or in case
Absolutely.
Of some miracle, Ron Paul would get elected. Okay. Let me ask you this. Are you aware that AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, allocated $25 million to with attack ads to go after Ron Paul? I don't know, first of all, if you're aware of that or not. And second of all, why do you think they did that? Just throw that out there. I mean, just since we're on the subject of Ron Paul in particular, his foreign policy.
Sure, of course. Yes, I am aware of that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Israel is highly dependent on U.S. financial support. We all know that. But my point is, just like with stopping the wars, Ron Paul is not going to, since he's not going to get elected, he is not going to get the U.S. to stop supporting Israel either. And again, if you want to be just simply practical about it, the only way to stop this sort of thing is by building an independent movement of the working class. And I'm sorry, Carl, my experience, 30 years inside the mainstream labor movement, is that this argument, oh yes, I'm all in favor of a workers' party or what they call a labor party or whatever, I'm all in favor of that, but just not right now. Right now, and of course, their excuse is slightly different from yours, they have another lesser evil that they want to propose, which is the Democrats. But all that Carl is proposing is the same old tired thing of lesser evil politics. And it just simply has been a total disaster for the working class in the United States and internationally. And what goes along with it is this single issue focus. And for some people, it might be abortion. For others, it might be the war. For others, it might be right-to-work laws. And you cannot, amongst workers, you cannot part of what we're trying to do is affect the consciousness of working-class people in this country. And you can't do that by just simply taking up the single issues as separate entities. You have to deal with the total of what people are facing.
I rejected John's either-or earlier. It is not an alternative to build your workers' movement and to support establishment candidates who oppose the murderous policies of the current administration. Marx, in his Maturity, wrote, "People make history, but not just as they please. They make history with the materials delivered to them from previous history." The materials delivered to us from previous history is the Obama administration and this peculiar form of elections that we have. We started out today by talking about how the point of the elections is precisely to prevent the public's views being represented in the government. Policy is insulated from politics in America. And what's happened here is that there's been a glitch. There's been a problem. There's been a hole in the fabric. And Ron Paul represents a sport in the system that the system hasn't counted on, and it should be used against the policies, which are essentially the same, that a Republican or Democratic president would follow.
John, do you see any use for then, like what Carl is suggesting here, is like seeing a division in the working class or just in the Republican Party, and trying to use a wedge to break that division open more, and at the same time try to get issues out there that they don't want discussed.
Well, of course, in Germany in the 1930s, there was a wedge between the Nazis and the mainstream capitalist parties.
Mm-hmm.
And so the logic of what Carl and others who advocate supporting Ron Paul, the logic of that would be, well, let's support the Nazis to create confusion.
Well,
within the capitalist class. I mean, I know that Carl is not would not advocate that, but that's the, and in fact, of course, in some ways, that's what the Communist Party advocated at that time. They said, after the Nazis, then us.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't exactly work out that way, did it? But, the main thing, Carl is simply wrong. It's pure idealism based on, there's no evidence whatsoever for his claim that you can campaign for the political independence of the working class on the one hand, and on the other hand, support the choices, accept the choices that corporate America is willing to give us politically. That is to say, agree that we are limited to voting for one or the other of the corporate supported candidates.
John, that's what I do. That's what I do every time I walk into a voting booth. You know, the first vote I ever cast was for the peace candidate in 1964. Because
who was that?
Who indeed? Because his opponent would have got us deeper into the war. I voted for Lyndon Johnson, the peace candidate, right?
Exactly.
Now, the point is, you make the choices that are offered to you there. What's peculiar about this year is that when we're supposed to have a wonderful sort of Tweedledum, Tweedledummer election between Romney and Obama, Ron Paul has emerged as a breakdown in the limits of allowable debate. That's the main reason to consider it. Look at what he actually says about the war. Look at what he actually says about his attack on the bailout of the banks.
Well,
now, it's exactly the military and economic policies of the Obama administration that have to be opposed. Ron Paul is a way to oppose them.
Well, in the first place, as I proved about his economic policies, Ron Paul only opposes them in the sense that he thinks that they don't go far enough. But I think the key...
That's strangely wrong, but go ahead.
No, it's not wrong. And if you look at nobody denied what the points that I've made about what he calls for. But the key to Carl's entire logic is what he said just now. You have to make the choices that are offered to you.
The voting booth. Yeah, sure you do.
Him.
Sure
and
you do.
So, but who is it that's offering us those choices?
No question. We agree on that.
It's the corporate America is.
Exactly.
And
that's when we see a breakdown in that system. We should take advantage of it.
As long as we are willing to accept that those are going to be the choices, then that's what we'll be confined to.
Okay.
In other words, we're what they say about thinking outside the box.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you also have to choose outside the box.
That's
too.
What Ron Paul represents in the system.
Okay.
No, Ron Paul is the ultimate corporate candidate.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take one last short musical break, and then we're going to come back to kind of do an epilogue here.
Oh, and Dave,
yes, and Bill,
I do have a question. Perhaps we get to it when we come back from somebody in the audience.
Yeah, let's do that, Bill. Okay, you've been listening to The Only War Labor on WFT. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Worldwide rebel songs, sing out loud all night long. Hang on, man, it won't be long. Worldwide rebel songs, worldwide rebel songs, sing out loud all night long. Hang on, man, it won't be long. Worldwide rebel songs.
In the alleys of Harare, the tenements of London town, where there's voices raised and barricades. Believe me, man, I'm down. Tyrants, bloodsuckers,
bears and bagmen got us picking through the crumbs. Raise your voices all together. Here we come!
Worldwide rebel songs, sing out loud all night long. Hang on, man, it won't be long. Worldwide rebel songs, worldwide rebel songs, sing out loud all night long. Hang on, man, it won't be long. Worldwide rebel songs.
In the hollowed pubs of Ireland, in Nairobi's sprawling slums, in Korea, open fire with a guitar, bass, and drums. Down in Gaza, down in Fresno, out your door and down your street. Are you gonna stand around, or are you gonna be free?
Worldwide rebel songs, sing out loud all night long. Hang on, man, it won't be long. Worldwide rebel songs, worldwide rebel songs, sing out loud all night long. Hang on, man, it won't be long. Worldwide rebel songs.
Okay, that was Tom Morello again. Off his actually, I'm playing music off two of his brand new CDs. One's called Worldwide Rebel Songs, and the other one, Union Town. And some really good stuff he's come out with. And Tom Morello happens to be one of our favorites here on the Illinois World Labor Hour, and he's also a member of the Industrial Workers of the World as well. So anyway, we're back now to continue the discussion debate with John Ryman, calling from Oakland, California, and Carl Esterbrook. And let's start out this last segment here. Bill, you said somebody else emailed in a question?
Yeah, it's a local listener, and I'm going to try and condense it. Basically, he's talking about, and this, you brought this up a little bit earlier, how we have the first past the post elections here, where you basically end up voting for a person rather than a set of policies. Right. And the listener asks, without proportional representation, how does one expect to use such a system in the U.S. to bring about change as has taken place in Europe when the system fosters catering to the establishment position supported by the elites?
Okay, let's let John answer that question. John?
Well, you know, you have to start with how masses of workers in this country are thinking. And, you know, I mean, I support proportional representation, but it's not exactly the burning issue in people's minds, you know. So, and I don't think it's true that you can never get anywhere without proportional representation. When you have a real mass workers' movement, you know, then you'll have millions of working class people and young people out in the streets campaigning for around ideas and people that are fighting for those ideas, and you'll have people that'll be first past the post.
Okay. Carl?
It seems to me that at the end of this discussion, what's emerged is a great lie in American politics that has got to be made clear before we can begin to sort out some of these questions we've been talking about today. And that great lie is that American capitalism is free market capitalism. That's the theory. Milton Friedman was mentioned earlier and others. People have talked about that's the theory of neoliberalism even, free markets and so forth. But the dirty little secret, of course, of capitalism from the beginning is that those free markets are not free at all, but are rather controlled, and that's the reason that the government, capitalist class has to control the state. Marx once again pointed out that under capitalism, the state was the executive committee of the bourgeoisie. That hasn't changed since 1848. It's still true. But what we hear in this country is a great lie that, in fact, the economy is a free market economy. Now, the really funny thing here is that what Ron Paul and what we call libertarianism in America has done has taken that lie and believed it and said, yeah, we should have free market capitalism, and to the extent that we don't, we have to oppose it. Oh, dear, say the capitalists, wait a minute. You know, we're talking that way, but obviously we don't want free market capitalism. Free market capitalism would not support the capitalist order. We need the state as the executive committee of the bourgeoisie, and this madman Paul is going to tear that down. And so we have Paul attacking the bailouts to the banks. which were absolutely necessary from the point of view of the banks, in the financial crisis. Now, it's only when we understand that Ron Paul is a true believer in free market economy, which no capitalist in America believes, that we can understand why his attack on the free market is couched in terms of a defense.
So what Ron Paul advocates, and by implication, I suppose what Carl is supporting, is the difference, the same difference as the difference that you had between FDR and Herbert Hoover, because what Ron Paul advocates is a return to the policies of Herbert Hoover. And what were those policies? As put forward by his Secretary of the Treasury, I believe it was, Andrew Mellon, at that time, what Mellon called for was liquidate labor, liquidate stocks, liquidate the farmers, liquidate real estate. It will purge the rottenness from the system. And that is exactly what Ron Paul is advocating. And I suppose maybe Carl supports that too.
John, do you remember the platform that FDR ran on in 1932? He ran on he ran on a platform of a balanced budget. He said the problem. He says the reason that Hoover, Cicero said not to know what happened before you were born is to be a child all your life. And I didn't mean to suggest you're a child. No, what FDR ran on in 1932 was a balanced budget. He said, look, we have a depression because the Hoover administration didn't balance the budget. It's the deficit that's killing us, said FDR. We've got to balance the budget. And once we do that, then things will go back to in the right place. And these attempts by Hoover et al., to stimulate the economy, those are crazy. That can't happen. Well, when he got into office, this is once again, we elect personalities in this country. We don't elect policies. When he got into office, he found out, which everyone knew at the time, that the Hoover policies wouldn't work, and another version of them, which is what he promised, wouldn't work either. So we got the new deal.
We got a caller that called in, has a comment here, said that the Pentagon operates independently of the president and that Obama said he was going to end the wars, too. So I don't know.
Exactly.
That's nonsense. The Pentagon doesn't operate independently from the president.
Well, what you have, it's a mistake to see the government as one monolithic entity. You have various different bureaucracies that, on the one hand, have links with different wings of the capitalist class and also have their own interests, which in the main are one and the same, but also conflicting. And so you have all these different pressures, and the president is not, they call the president the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, but also the president is under pressure from the military wing of the federal government. And the point that was made about Obama said he was going to end the war is a very valid point. And let's remember that there was another peace candidate who I think Carl said he voted for, who said he was going to end the war, and that was Johnson.
Yep. I was lied to both times.
Right, and now you're getting ready to be lied to again.
Well, that's what I think shouldn't happen. I mean, I was cured, fool me once, as George Bush said, I was fooled once by Lyndon Johnson.
And so I didn't vote for
people who said things of the sort
did
that he said.
Did you vote for
later.
Obama?
No, of course not.
Oh, okay.
Wouldn't vote for Obama. I didn't vote for Obama because I knew that he was lying to me just as Johnson did. But it seems to me that what we're talking about here is opposition to a sitting president's policies. And what Ron Paul represents right now is the only opposition, by accident. That's not supposed to happen. The only opposition we have in the major parties to the policies
of
sitting president.
Well, as I said, as far as his economic policies, the only opposition that Ron Paul represents is that he claims that Obama hasn't gone far enough.
No, that's wrong. You're wrong about that, John. That's the attack.
Absolutely.
The attack
when
on
you,
the
when
bank
you look
bailouts.
At what Ron Paul calls for.
At the heart of economics, at the heart of Paul's economics, is an attack on the bank bailouts.
The bank bailouts were done
at the behest of Wall Street by the Obama administration, just as it would have been by the Bush administration.
This is exactly why. It's such a mistake to engage in this single issue type of approach to politics.
I mentioned two. I have two issues that I'm concerned about.
They did mention two, but it's clear that
killing people and looting.
It's on the looting. Ron Paul would be even worse. That's exactly my point.
Well, I don't know how you know the future there, but what he's actually done is attacked the looting that Obama has done.
No, what he calls for would be even worse. He calls for crushing of the unions. He calls for handing fiscal policy entirely, without any kind of check whatsoever, over to the private banks.
Which is where they are now. Hey?
He calls for the utter devastation of all social programs. He calls for the abolition of the federal minimum wage. So how you can say that this doesn't represent an acceleration of transferring wealth to the rich is just simply incomprehensible to me.
Okay, well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to end it there. I'm sorry. This has been a really excellent discussion debate. We've just